Welcome to episode 24 from Digital Outbox. Hello and welcome to Digital Outbox. I'm Shaquille and I'm joined by Henry.
Hi there.
Hello. And an angry Ian.
Hi.
And Chris.
Hello.
Hi there. How's everybody doing?
Hi, Chris.
Yes. Yeah. Hello.
So it's Monday evening, 6:39, and we're going to record our podcast, and everybody's chirpy and full of energy, especially Ian.
Yes, yeah, twice you've mentioned that. Twice in 2 minutes.
Got to get the digs in now.
Yeah. Bring it. Okay.
Before you slap us down.
Before Ian gets more angry, let's crack on with the news. So, first topic of the day. I think we might have covered this before in the past, and it's a follow-up to that. It's monitor of internet usage in the UK. And I think Chris can tell us a bit more about this.
Yeah, it's more about it's monitoring communication. So the Home Office have decided they're going to push ahead with their plans to log all internet communication, not actually the content of that communication, but the source and receiver, if you like. So if it was maybe an email would be recorded as an email from one IP address to another. But all communication companies are going to be required to keep that information for a whole year. And that data is going to be available to public bodies, police, fire services. All sorts of different organisations will be able to have access to that information.
Yeah, but it's not just 653 public bodies will have access to this.
That does seem to go deep into the local council.
I could log in somewhere,
go down to the Mitchell Library, my local library, and say, oh, I want to see what Shaki was looking at last night. Ah, it's porn. Very good.
I think that's public knowledge anyway.
Ian, you'd have to cross-reference that to your list of IP addresses.
So don't they do that in a limited way already then, don't you think?
With Echelon, is it not that Echelon is the system that MI5 and that have to monitor everything?
Yeah.
I think part of the difference, isn't it, that you kind of need a... you need to request that the information is stored, or someone is being monitored, so therefore you make that request for that information to be captured. Whereas this is capturing everything in that then might be used going on for investigations.
This is guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, I mean,
we will track everything you do, just in case we want to spy on you.
Seems fair
and
enough.
And they're saying it's for like capturing networks of people. So if they find one person, they do want they're interested in who they've been communicating with. So they've then got all the information.
It's absolute guff. $2 billion over the next 10 years. The country's already screwed, and we're going to spend money on this.
Yep.
Unbelievable. I sound like a Tory, and I think that's the thing that's disturbing me the most.
No, I mean, it does sound like something that could get out of hand, and
it just sounds like Big Brother.
Yeah, exactly. So
the thing is, I don't think they can keep this stuff really very saved, can they? I mean, we've already proven time and time again that the government is the worst place you want to keep any of your personal data. Yeah. So for them to even suggest that your data is safe with them is particularly when so many people are allowable to have access without asking a judge or anyone, it seems a bit. Seems a bit OTT, really.
That's a bit I don't like. It's the who makes sure that out of all these 653 public bodies, that the people looking at my information are actually good people and they're not using it against me.
Who watches the watchers?
Indeed.
So has there been like a cost attributed to this?
Yeah, $2 billion over the next 10 years.
Sorry, I missed that.
Sorry, I shouldn't have been so ranty.
No.
But that's the cost, and even then, I don't think that's enough. Mm. So if you look at the having to track what everybody's doing with every different type of communication device, and you think how, just mobiles are everywhere, and they've got no chance of doing it.
I imagine they're going to be asking the companies themselves to implement all this as well. So imagine the costs of...
Yeah, costs will get passed down to us. All our broadband will start going up higher.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Moving on to the next story, which Henry can tell us all about.
Yeah, well, it looks like Rupert Murdoch's, what he said is that he's looking to block Google indexing of all his content. He's saying that it's a possibility at the moment, but really the thing is that he's looking to charge for any kind of content from the Murdoch empire, and so he's looking at how he might block Google indexing. He says that Google's indexing of all the headlines and introductory paragraphs isn't actually fair use at all, and it's an illegal use of his content. So it's not happening straight away. Looks like
surprise.
He's looking at introducing it quite slowly. He says he's going to take it very slowly, as it, just step by step. But to me, this kind of highlights the problem for all content creators. We've talked about games developers, software developers, or anyone, even the guys that write newspaper articles and stuff. And I don't think anyone would disagree that these guys need to be paid for the stuff that they produce. It's just like, how do you get a return on investment in this kind of digital age? To me, though, to block Google, Google's the way people find your content in the first place. So I think it's probably the most foolish business decision since Electrolux turned down Dyson.
But I actually thought it would be something around the Gerald Ratner line of.
Well, yeah. But Ratner didn't actually do anything, though, did he? So I reckon if he really does go ahead with this, he really is.
The stuffed thing is, he could block Google Index and like that. You know, just robots.txt, set it up, done, blocked.
Yeah, I think the reason he's come up with the legal angle is just so that he can enforce that as well. So he can put, he can stop the content, but then also get Google to, make sure they can't show any of the content.
I'm sure if Google turned around like tonight or tomorrow and says, right, anything that Murdoch owns, we're not going to spider, we're not going to show in Google results, he would take them to court.
He would, absolutely.
I think this is a pile of poo. It's absolute poo.
It is nonsense, but the thing is that it's really quite key. You know, people will pay for decent content. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, definitely.
But the problem with all the Murdoch stuff is there's so much junk that you get as well as anything half decent that you want to read. Now, one of my mates at work, he's quite for newspapers and stuff, and he would quite happily pay for to get access to the Times columnists and things. My point is that, that's fine for the one or two people that you want to read, but there's a whole load of junk that you don't want to read at all, and you just wouldn't pay for. Yeah. And they're kind of bundling that all up at the moment and pretending that it's a value proposition, when in actual fact, there's actually very little in there that you would pay for. So
I did read something today that was an interesting sort of development on the story, or someone sort of thinking down the line a little bit, which was this, it could be quite a clever decision by him if he does block Google's indexing, but then goes to Bing and says, you can have the indexing of my site if you pay a license fee for content. Now, him on his own doing that might not be a game changer, but if all content providers start going down that route, it can shift the power of search engines, because obviously search engines are only powerful if you've got all the content to search from. So while one person doing this might not be such a big issue, although he's obviously a big game player, everyone following suit could actually end up putting a model in place where content providers can get licensed on that search page, and therefore they get more power than the search engines do.
It's never going to work. I think that's an old business way of thinking about doing business, and the internet doesn't. It really doesn't lend itself to these,
I think it's proven time and time again that the more closed you become, then the less of a business on the net that you have.
Definitely.
You think his advisors must have said something to him. I mean, I can't imagine him being that tech savvy that he would make this kind of decision on his own.
During the interview, he seemingly says very shortly, and then inferred it was weeks. And then as a follow-up, they then turned it around and says, actually, it's more months and quarters, not weeks. And it all looks to be around the move to, you'll pay for the content, and once we've got probably enough people paying for content, then we'll actually start to limit down what Google can see and report back.
Mm.
And I've been, I don't know how much revenue and how much hits they're getting from Google. Maybe it's not a lot because they've already got such big names.
Mm.
You know, do people Google for the sun when they can just type in the address?
But this is part of the problem, really. What kind of happens is, you know, my mate that I was saying that reads the Times, who he's following is the columnists themselves. Mm. And when the columnists actually realize that they don't need Murdoch anymore and they can, by publishing their own content, people will give them the money themselves for their content, and they don't really need a Murdoch at all. That's really the kind of real game changer, I think, that's really coming actually when we all become our own kind of journalists and we are all kind of reporting on the stuff that's actually interesting.
Yeah, and I think in some ways they're there. I mean, if you look at the millions of bloggers and the kind of, you know, the 99% that are fairly rubbish, and if you look at the ones that are the actual, you know, have built up a bit of a business round about their content, you know, and there's nothing to stop the well-known columnists starting to do that as well, but they've always been a bit snooty, you know, looking down on blogs and internet thinking, well, that's just all wannabes.
Yeah, and also they're also making a lot of money from Murdoch without actually having to really worry about it. They just have to you know, publish their stuff and that's it. Whereas, you know, an internet model requires a bit more, just thought and a change to the way you're doing business, I suppose.
Okay. Sound like an interesting story to keep an eye on over the next few months and quarters.
What a dirty, grubby man. I feel I should just add that in as well.
Yeah. Another Google-related story that came out this week. Google have bought a company called AdMob for $750 million. Now, I'd never heard of AdMob before, and basically they're a mobile advert vendor. And they sort of serve adverts on apps that you can find on the iPhone and other mobile devices. So, you know, like if there's an app available and there's a free version, more than likely we'll have an advert on it. So AdMob is a company that could be one of the vendors that displays those adverts. So to me, it sounds like quite a big deal because I think it will put, Google will become the market leader in mobile advertising. Which is not as big at the moment, but I think it can grow and might have a bigger impact on advertisement than, you know, like on something like on TV or even on the internet.
It seems like a good match of the companies, basically. They're both doing the same thing, but I guess Google have looked at getting 125.5 billion ad impressions and actually thinking to themselves, I can turn that into a heck of a lot more than 750 million.
Exactly.
You know, and probably in quite a short time.
Yeah. You think about, like, for example, on TV, you see an ad and that's fine. But with mobile devices, people carry them with them all the time. So, you know, like, for people to see adverts on mobile devices, they'll probably see them more than they would on a TV.
Yeah.
There's more fine-grained control for advertisers as well because they can segment their users and actually identify what they're doing and at the time of the advert as well.
But it's also locational, you know, so I can be walking down a street and get an advert for, I don't know, W.H. Smith's, and lo and behold, there's my store, 100 yards away.
Yeah,
and buying a company that's already doing it means that all the infrastructure and, you know, setup's done. They don't have to worry about that now.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, obviously, it is a good deal because Apple were apparently also interested in AdMob. I think I read somewhere earlier today that it was only a few weeks ago that Apple executives were talking to AdMob people. And then, you know, obviously, the AdMob are in talks with Google as well, and Google decided to go ahead with the purchase. So,
Apple missed the boat a bit, really.
Yeah.
Well, Apple have got so much money, but it's sitting in the bank. And they
they could easily have bought that. Easily.
They don't seem to buy that many things. They bought that map company a while ago, and that was about it.
Mm. Well, they bought that mobile chip company as well, didn't they?
Yeah. And all the rumours is for the next devices, it's going to be their own chips.
Yeah. So another Google story, which Ian can tell us about, is Google's Go.
Go, go, go. sorry, I had to do it. It's a new programming language. And I guess the interesting thing from this is they're trying to take the performance and security benefits that you get from a compiled language, like C++, but then try to make it, you know, more flexible and dynamic and the kind of speed of development from something like Python. And I guess the interesting thing for me is I didn't expect, you know, it seemed to come out of nowhere. They've got this new language. They've got it up in the internet. You can go to the website, which is golang.org. And even more surprising was their mascot, which is Gordon the Gopher.
Oh, let's all download it now and get developing. That's sold it for me. I'm sure
Philip Schofield must be getting some money for this.
I hadn't heard anything about this, and then suddenly it appears, and it's not just appeared, but it's appeared as this fully grown, well, not fully grown yet. It obviously needs a lot of work on it, but it does work, it compiles, and it is actually a language, you know?
Yeah. The only reason you know about it is because Google's done it. There are actually, I mean, I'm amazed at the number of programming languages that everybody's knocking out every 5 minutes, and you never actually hear of them because, you know, nobody's actually using them. Mm. And even things like Ruby and stuff, which has got a bit of a buzz around it. Mm. There's not really that many jobs going in
terms of things. That's the key driver. I mean, you're only going to invest your own time in learning a language if A, you're going to use it, and B, it's a transferable skill that you can then take on elsewhere.
I think that's probably why if a big organization like Google releases something like this, it's automatically got that kind of kickstart.
Yeah.
Especially if they do roll it out across all their different platforms, and they're becoming a bit omnipresent, aren't they, in everything?
Well, it's a lot of people are now saying that if you're going to look at a mobile phone device, the language to go for is Android, or the platform to develop for, sorry, is Android. Just because of you're hitting loads of phones and loads of devices, including tablets now. So I'll stick with the iPhone. Not that I've done anything.
Objective-C, that's the way to go. No, there was some advice that someone said you should learn a new programming language every year if you're a programmer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't even get the hang of the ones that I know already, or you know, I've heard exactly. of already. So.
I'd rather make things rather than just spend all my time learning. Thanks very much.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, moving on. We now have Bing Maps.
Bing Maps. So previously in the UK, if you went to bing.com/maps, you got forwarded onto the quite horrible, I thought, multi-map.
Oh dear! No wonder Google Maps took on so well. That's horrible.
Yeah, but I was always surprising because Microsoft, I think it was Microsoft Live Maps used to work really well in the UK, and then they replaced it with that crap multi-map. But anyway, Bing Maps has now arrived in the UK, and a couple of things I thought were really good. The London maps were really, really, really nice when you visited any London areas. And for me, what was a biggie was that you can actually swap to Ordnance Survey maps.
So wow. I think that's why Multimaps was bought by them, because they had all the licenses for the Ordnance Survey.
Yeah, but then the interface was terrible.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But once you've got the licenses, you can deal with the interface.
But it's taken them so long. I mean,
you can buy any of the my voice is going up about 15 again as I get a bit more rattled. But I mean, anyone can buy the licenses for the Ordnance Survey maps.
So a couple of things that was nice. Ordnance Surveys worked really well. You know, so you can put in any. I'm doing hopefully another Monroe this weekend. Slap into Bing Maps, swap to Ordnance Survey. Done. Really, really nice. Nearby railway stations worked well. They've got different layers like Wikipedia and photos, etc. And it was all the same as Google with their kind of walking routes, draggable routes, etc.
So yeah, it's kind of emerged as a fully grown app, hasn't it?
Rather than superb.
Sort of,
and it's got the old. It's got the kind of the four different views of some of the kind of big cities. So I can slap in my postal code and you get the bird's eye view, which you can then kind of see the north, south, east, west of. So yeah, very impressive.
I think this also moves Bing out of its beta phase, doesn't it? This final release has now meant that they've officially removed the beta.
Yeah, I noticed there was some updates they were talking about coming for Bing very soon. It's an impressive rival to Google now.
Bing! Mm.
And quickly as well.
Oh, absolutely. But they had to, I mean, they were miles behind, so it's, I mean, they've obviously spent a lot of money registering that Bing name. I still think visually it looks great when you visit the site and you've got all these images popping up. Some of them are amazing. I just think it's actually a nice contrast to Google when you hit it, you know, and it's quite plain and there's nothing there. I've been surprised.
Quick survey though, do you use it?
Sorry, what was that?
Do you use it?
Yeah.
I've used it very occasionally, but Google's still the first one I go to.
So and I guess image search, I find Bing much better. Maps, I would need to go and, because when I try Google Maps for like directions, I always think they suck. So I'll be trying Bing out in comparison and seeing how it does. And When it comes to the kind of day-to-day searching, Google I still get better results from. But I do try both.
I'm looking at it just now, and it's actually, I agree with Ian, it looks quite slick. And it seems quicker as well than Google Maps.
It was really, really, really impressive.
But the search you don't use on a daily basis yet?
No.
So it's not running over for search, but I don't know if it's just because I find things with Google. Google works for me. So it's going to take a lot to change me away from that.
No, I'm looking at the sort of directions functionality, and it's very clearly laid out. It's quite not really easy to use. Yeah, quite impressive. I think I'll give it a try in the future.
I should have had that as my pick.
Yeah, you should have. Yeah,
two picks, the price of one.
Cheap. So, moving on to our favourite topic of the week, Apple news again.
Woohoo!
I'm just going to record that to save your voice every week.
Thank you. This week we heard about the first worm attack on the iPhone.
Yeah, but that was this is a piece of nonsense. So there's a worm that's attacking iPhone. It's only in jailbroken phones, and it's only in jailbroken phones if you have not, you know, removed the default password or changed the default password after installing SSH. The worm was harmless. It changed the background picture to Rick Astley.
Rick rolled.
But this week it's grown, hasn't it?
It has grown.
There is a malicious one now.
Well, they put the source code out. So as soon as they put the source code out, somebody was going to pick it up and put a malicious one out. And the only thing I didn't like about this was just the way it was reported in the BBC.
Yeah.
It was like as if it was, you know, something that was every iPhone's, you know, because I had a couple of people at work were like, oh, you're going to get a virus. You're going to get a worm. And you're like, shut up. Read it properly. You know, and it's, and I guess, I mean, they've made it, you've got all these, is it GeoHot and all these kind of jailbroken, you know, download the app and you can jailbreak with one button. It just leaves you wide open. You know, that's the whole point of that, you know, that routine, just to open up your iPhone. So it's just, you know, they've made it a no-brainer, but at the same time, people just need to remember that changing that password and they're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, or so don't jailbreak your phone in the first place.
What was that?
Don't jailbreak your phone in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest, I looked at a list of apps that are available and nothing stands out as particularly what made to do it. But I think a lot of people are probably doing it for the free apps. It's now, if you just go online, it's dead easy to go and download.
I think initially there was a case for jailbreaking, wasn't it, when there were so many apps available. And I would imagine now these days, anybody who jailbroke the phone right from the beginning are probably...
Well, if you want to do it, it's a no-brainer. It takes you a couple of hours and it's done.
Yeah. 10.6.2 update was out this week for OS X.
Yes.
And obviously it fixed several small bugs that were in the OS X, but I think the main one was the one that was publicised a few weeks ago about the loss of data when the guest users logged in. So apparently that's been fixed as well. And other than that, nothing really exciting.
Was it also 10.6.2 that broke the linkage with Arial Atom?
It was, yeah.
But it wasn't an Arial Atom.
No,
because you would have to buy that in the track.
I've just got something else. Yeah.
Glad you mentioned that, because that's just reminded me. I was reading earlier on before we came online that the Palm Pre update, the latest one, apparently doesn't fix the iTunes sync thing. It's still broken.
Get out.
So it's quite nice to hear that. Sorry, Chris.
But yeah, so 10.6.2, between the different developer or beta versions of it, it seemed to include Atom support and then it dropped it.
Yeah.
And then it included it, but the final one released has dropped it. And was it deliberate? Don't know. Probably was.
Come on.
Does it matter though? I mean,
well, the thing is, I mean, everybody's going, come on, the Macs don't support, you know, that chipset. So what is the big deal?
Exactly.
Back in your box.
I'm back.
And the next story I find quite pleasing to hear.
Oh, it's good to hear the fanboy back.
It's the long-running battle between Apple and the SciStar, who were basically selling clones of, they were PCs with OS X installed on them. And I think Henry can tell us a bit more about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, we just had to have this from the Register's headline, which was Apple wins Attack of the Clones, which I thought was very good. So they've Apple have won their case against against SciStar. So they've got to work out kind of. SciStar are kind of talking it down, saying, well, you know, there's nothing more to go to trial. Actually, the Apple are saying, no, there's quite a bit, you know, you breach of contract and all sorts of things that you've done there. So, obviously you've got to work out how much the damages should be as well. So, I think it's pretty good for Apple.
Yeah.
You sign an EULA or whatever you call them when you buy your software, and you agree to abide by those conditions when you install the software. So, SciStar, you're bang out of order for trying.
Well, I think I read earlier on also today that even though Apple have won the legal battle, I think it was in New York, but that SciStar may sort of appeal, but it'll be in a different state. So
yes, because
I think it's just to sort of lengthen the process, isn't it, more than anything?
Well, basically what SciStar have done is they've said, right, well, initially it's about Leopard, and now they've said it's actually about, they've got a new court case about Snow Leopard. So basically what they've decided to do is just say, well, you know, any new version of software that of OS X that Apple bring out, they can try and bring a new case against them. So which just seems a bit ridiculous. And the kind of way that Apple had dealt with the second case, the judge said that they couldn't actually, because they tried to seal up all the documents, because there was all sorts of financial details and things that were in the first case that they didn't want to make public. Yeah. The judge in the second case said, well, I'm sorry, guys, if that's the way you want to play, then you can't just dismiss this second case on the basis of what happens in the first one. So so it's good news for Apple from that point of view. And then kind of, but they've still got to sort out the next cases. And as you say, they may well be an appeal.
Yeah. I think that there were also some stories earlier in the week about SciStar, that I think it's two guys, isn't it, who formed this company, and the stories about how they were sort of making out that I think the technology they use to install OS X is it Hackintosh or something like that.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the stuff's all freely available on the Hackintosh website, really, isn't it?
And I think these stories were like saying that when these guys were interviewed, they were sort of implying that, like, almost like they didn't use Hackintosh, or they created it or something like that. Yeah. And a lot of like articles were sort of like basically saying, no, this is rubbish. It's quite clear that they use Hackintosh, which was already written by, you know, like, as you say, it's freely available on other websites. So just seemed like a bunch of corn merchants to me, really.
Yep, I think you're right, and they're getting their comeuppance now. So unless they're sponsored by Microsoft, of course, and we can always speculate on
that. That's always been a long rumor. That's Microsoft and or Dell or, you know, any other competitor of Apple. So unfortunately, that brings us to the end of the Apple news this week, and we can now happily move on to gadgets and games.
Woohoo!
The big story from a few days ago was the release of Modern Warfare 2, which has gone on to become one of the biggest selling games of all time.
So I think so. Oh, sorry.
No, that's just going to say, and I'll pass you on to Ian for this.
I was eager beaver. So I think this is now like officially one of the biggest, you know, certainly 24-hour period, biggest selling game yet. And I guess we'll cover off the game first of all before we get into the kind of controversies around it. So myself and Chris have played it, and my view is it's a pretty stunning game. Single player game has certainly got some really great missions in it. Pretty memorable. Gets a little bit boring sometimes, and you don't understand maybe exactly which character you're playing, because you're playing all sorts of different characters, but the set pieces in it are superb. I don't know how you feel, Chris.
Yeah, I've played very little of the single player, has to be said. I always knew that this, from the trailers, you could tell it was going to be a set piece game.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I found a couple of them pretty corny. You know, the Skidoo racing thing is.
Just touch on that. So if you've not played the game and you want to be surprised, then you should probably move on to the next chapter. But there's a couple of kind of set pieces in it that I thought were all right, but a bit kind of like, you know. So you're on your Skidoo or whatever it is, snowmobile.
Yes,
and it's just really arcadey and it's just very unrealistic. You know, there's a bit where you need to shoot people and you're not even aiming, you just need to press your trigger and it just blows people up. And it just felt really tacked on, a couple of those bits.
In a game that, especially in the sort of online versions, it's built around being quite, not necessarily ultra realistic, but realistic enough.
Yeah.
These elements are properly arcade.
Yeah, exactly. But still, I think you're going to get a good single player game out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to go back and play it because it's definitely intriguing me enough.
Yeah.
Some you guys play multiplayer more often then?
Yeah, I mean, you know me. A lot of the time, I won't even complete the single player games. I just get bored.
Mm.
I'd rather go on and get abused by some 12-year-old slagging me off for being a twatty jock. There's two kind of multiplayer aspects to this. There's one part, something new to the kind of Call of Duty games called Spec Ops. And this is a series of really small missions. It's almost like taking some of the missions from the single player game and also including some new ones. And they range from, you know, maybe like 40, 50 second missions through to maybe 4 or 5 minutes. It's almost like bite-sized gaming. And you can play that with up to two people co-op. And I actually really enjoyed them. Myself and Chris tried it last night for the first time.
The ones we did were very varied.
They were excellent. The one with the helicopter I really, really liked. So, yeah. And just to give you an idea, it wasn't just like, you know, two of you side by side running through and shooting people. Somebody was in the chopper protecting the guy on the ground while the guy on the ground was trying to fight his way through a whole lot of people. You know, and it was the way it was done, I thought, was really, really good.
It was very pick up a play, and it was also very, you know, Moorish, because you get different ratings for how fast and how well you complete different aspects of these little bite-sized chunks. And we played all of them through at least twice, or the ones we did them twice, because we wanted to just get that, you know, extra star, do it a bit quicker, whatever, get the extra kills.
Is it offering any more variety than any other first-person shooter?
Well, I would say yes. I mean, if you then go into the multiplayer side of things, the amount of maps, the amount of different modes, and I guess it's the amount of challenges and unlockables as you pick up perks and pick up weapons as you play through it is massive. I've never seen a game with so much.
So you're getting
as big a multiplayer as it is single player, if not more, because it'll take you longer to do the multiplayer.
So I'm assuming it's good value for money then?
Yeah, I mean, the value for money thing's probably an interesting question, because they charge £10 more for this game than any others. You know, so they bumped up the price. So it was generally it's £45. I know some of the supermarkets were doing it for £32 and £36. But
it was like the day before launch that Amazon dropped their price to £32, I think, and everyone else has followed suit since.
Yeah.
But it just meant that everyone who did a pre-order actually ended up spending more
didn't. For me, the value for money is not an issue, because this is a game that you're going to be playing a year's time, 2 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
It's undoubtedly they're going to bring out multiplayer maps for it, even though there's lots of maps there. And it looks like there's about sort of 15 to 20 different modes.
The original Modern Warfare was still being and is still being played, so this one will just take over.
And I can see them bringing out more of the spec op missions as well. You know, it's like some sort of combined pack. You know, pay 800 points or pay $10, and you'll get two maps and maybe three spec op missions, or the other way around.
Yeah.
Now,
but not that we're allowed to play this game, because the MPs have had their say again.
Yeah, and this is the only thing that I guess sticks in the throat a little bit. So there was the MPs were shocked. And were amazed last week. If you've not played it, you don't want to hear it, then skip on. There's a controversial level within the single player mode, which when you start the game, you're asked if you're wanting to play through it, and you can skip it, and it has no impact on the game itself. And within this, it's the airport scene. Within this scene, you are an undercover agent acting as a terrorist, and you mow down innocent civilians within the airport. And when I say mow down, you really are mowing down hundreds and hundreds of people.
Well, you don't have to.
You can choose not to.
You can just walk along.
Yeah, I decided to mow people down. And you're seeing people are trying to help people that are already half shot and pulling them away, and you can put them out of misery. Because I thought that was the best thing to do. But as usual, this, and well, and I'm kind of conflicted. In some ways, this is the, it has no impact in the game. It is no, you know, you can skip through it. It could easily have been a cutscene. And I think it's just given, it's just given the almost the anti-game movement a real kind of, no, it's given them something to like throw stones at, and it's just not needed.
Well, I think my view on this, I mean, obviously I've not played this, but I saw it on the news, and being a bit of a gamer myself, you know, I hate it when any of the MPs come along and start, you know, criticising games, but I cannot, at the same time, I can see, like, you know, a bit of having a bit of moral value attached to this, you know, like, I think they should be complaining about it. You know, just to, because otherwise, if you let things like this happen, you know, then you just, you know, like as you become immune to violence on TV, you know, like kids growing up, they could become immune to these kind of things as well. And I think it's good to every now and again just step back a bit and say, okay, yes, they're criticizing games maybe, but you know, and the actual specific topic of this, yeah, maybe they have a right to, you know, shout a bit.
I think people who've actually maybe seen it and played it through and understood it in context have a right to make a decision on what they think about that.
Not sure. I think for like the average gamer, it's fine. It's just like, you know, these impressionable kids that you get, and you know, like mothers buying games for kids, even though they're
that's more the issue for me.
This is an 18 certificate.
Yeah.
So they shouldn't be buying it.
No, but you know they will, don't you? I mean,
that's beside the point. That's the issue that should be being discussed then.
You know, so it should be, how good a parent are you?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that sort of argument goes back, you know, way back. I mean, this is like before even video games.
I had people asking me at work and saying, oh, I've got a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old, do you think I should be buying it? Mm. And I'm saying no. It's like, but they'll just play it elsewhere. I says, well, what are you asking me for?
Unbelievable.
You know, I'm not some, you know, just don't come to me and ask me.
Well, I'll give you an example. You know, when GTA 4 came out, my nephew, he's about, well, I've got two nephews, one's about 18 and one's like 9 or 10. And he loves GTA 4 and his mom went and bought him it. You know, and I said to her, I said, don't buy it from him. She went, well, he wanted it, you know, and it's just a computer game at the end of the day. I'm like,
I think GTA is worse than this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got prostitution in there.
Well, you can take it a prostitute, pay her, and then if you want your money back, you shoot her. You know, and you know, you're dealing drugs, you're doing all these crimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's far, far worse.
Say, I don't think a game should be, I mean, I agree with you, Shaq. I think you should have the step back and review, check where things are headed. But this is an 18 certificate game. An average gamer nowadays, I think, is around 30 years old, something like that. Gaming isn't for kids, and parents need to understand that, and that's an issue that needs to be out there.
No, certain games are for kids, and I think that's fine. The same way certain movies are for kids, and I think that's fine.
And that's why movies has had certificates added, you know. And I think that's the wider issue that needs to be looked at. In this particular case, I found the scene very, very powerful in the game, and it was, you know, it's a pretty horrible scene. And the arguments that, yes, it could be taken out, you were given the opportunity not to see it, to skip through it, to do it. They did everything they could, that if you didn't want to, you know, watch it.
And I know there's a bit of the old kind of mini White House, you know, why are you watching something if you know it's going to be bad?
Mm.
You know, if somebody comes on screen and says, this is a horror movie, and you're going to be scared, and then you go, oh, it was horrible. It's like, well, you were warned.
Yeah.
And they're always trying to protect everyone. You know, everyone else shouldn't be watching this, but I have to watch it because...
But as a game developer, there was nothing in this game that so far tells me that level had to be there, had to be played.
Ooh.
And to me, it's just...
But then that's why you get director's cut movies and, you know...
No, but this has just been put in just to get column inches.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, like us prattling on about it.
I don't think, no, like, that now that's been put in, they should take it out. But I think at the same time, like Chris said, it's designed for, you know, adult gamers, clearly. But, and I think if the MPs hadn't said anything, then they would have been criticised by angry parents saying, oh, why didn't you warn us about this? So, yeah, you're probably right. Maybe the issue is a bit to do with parenting more than anything else. But.
Well, you see, I don't understand why it's an issue when it's terrorists mowing down civilians, but actually it, once you put on a uniform, you can go and shoot guys on the other side because they've got a uniform on, and somehow the violence there is more acceptable.
Like most other games, you can also shoot civilians in this one, even when you've got the uniform on.
Mm.
You know, so you're still shooting people, you're still killing people. But they seem to be outraged because it's innocent.
Yeah. Maybe we need a backstory on everyone that comes onto the screen so that we can assess whether it's morally right for us special ops to be.
Away from that issue, but an absolutely stunning game.
Yeah, good stuff. Let's move on because I think we could discuss this topic all night.
Yeah,
sorry, I missed that, but let's move on anyway. Microsoft this week banned chipped Xboxes from Xbox Live.
Yeah. Yes. So just ahead of Modern Warfare coming out, and nobody knows the exact figure. Microsoft have only said a small percentage, but there's been some estimates of it could have been as much as 600,000 accounts have been banned.
About I've heard a million today.
Sorry, what was that?
I've heard a million today. It's gone up.
So that's out of the 20 million live users. And basically they've been detecting, it looks like they've been detecting for a few months now.
Is this global, by the way, or is this just UK?
No, this is global.
Right,
this is global. So it looks like they've been detecting for a few months now people that have been using flashed or chipped Xboxes. And they dropped the ban hammer on them just before Modern Warfare came out, which I think is perfect timing.
It was perfect timing.
And, about time too.
The bit that amazed me was the BBC News. And I was driving down to Portsmouth last week and I heard this guy, and I just wanted to punch him in the head. So there's a guy called Raz, who's only 25 years old, bless, and he's gutted by this because he put on Modern Warfare, my most anticipated game of the year, and something popped up about being banned, and I was like, oh, sod off. So he rebooted, and he got the message again, and he was like, oh, what? Ooh. So he did it again, and then he realized he'd been banned, and he just thinks this is so wrong. He's only pirated 30 to 40 games, but that's because they're too dear.
Had he bought this game then?
He bought Modern Warfare because you need to, if you want to play a game online, you need to actually purchase it.
Right, okay.
So all the other games have been downloaded, and they're playing them offline.
So it doesn't matter if you're playing on like a proper official game, if it just detects that your Xbox is chipped and you get banned.
Yes.
Ah.
Xbox Live is a very closed system, deliberately so, to make sure that it's a controlled environment, I guess, as well as no cheaters and all those
controls
kind of
piracy, but it's also to stop people, you know, developing scripts, cheating, all that kind of good stuff. And as we all know, anybody that plays online will tell you, if somebody can cheat, they will. Because people just want to win at all costs, and it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible, and it goes all the way back to, you know, Quake and Doom and the little script kiddies sitting there with some auto aim bot and all that kind of nonsense, and sitting there with, you know, scripts that are taking walls away so you can't hide anywhere and all that good stuff. So what was quite interesting is that BBC seemed to have kind of got their teeth into this. The next day they then confirmed from MS that this was permanent. And it's like, of course it is.
Of course it is.
And part of me wants to say, tell you what, Microsoft, go and phone the police and go and arrest these guys for software piracy. And that's what I wanted to say to 25-year-old Raz. Get a grip. Grow up, man. You've been caught with your fingers in the pie, and it's not very nice, is it?
I read Raz's story as well. And
He's a twat. So he is.
And I have to say, I felt no sympathy for him because, say, it's open knowledge that you're not, you know, if you pirate it, you will get banned from Xbox Live. You can't expect to pirate and be on Xbox Live.
And, so the interesting, the interesting warning for people is, I think eBay is probably going to be flooded with Xboxes now, and chances are a lot of them won't work. So be very careful buying a second-hand Xbox now.
I think just
unless
a
you want a really
different...
cheap, go on, Chris. Unless you want a really cheap box that will still play games, it just won't connect to Xbox Live.
And it'll let you play lots of pirate games.
Mm. I think that's slightly different perspective I was thinking of, and I'm not supporting Raz here, but I think his point of view is probably that I bought a legit game and I should be able to play it. But I think the fact that he's been playing pirate games before...
No, but it's the fact that he's taken his Xbox, went into a shop, paid £70 for it to be flashed, and then he's shared among 30 to 40 games amongst his friends. He's not daft. He knows the score.
And he also... His story says that. It says that, well, you know, we knew that we'd get kind of thrown off live, but, you know, we hadn't heard of anybody. It happened to anyone, so we just thought we'd be okay, and now it's actually happened. It's terrible.
And I think that's where Ian's story about the eBay stuff is quite interesting, because if anybody's buying, like, a used Xbox with no intention of ever playing a pirate game, they need to be careful that they don't buy a chipped one.
Yeah, sure.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
You need to be aware.
You know,
and at the end of the day, it's probably better just to... I mean, they're quite cheap new anyway,
exactly,
aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't buy a second-hand one now because there's going to be thousands of them and people out there just trying to scam.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what eBay's like? You know, you're going to get it and then they're going to say, oh, it's nothing to do with me. Dirty. Dirty, dirty.
So another Microsoft Xbox article this week we have is about Natal. Chris?
Yep, we... again, rumor alert, really. But it's sort of a semi-leak. They've been talking to organizations, and it looks like we might be getting it November next year, November 2010. So about a year away, priced between about £50 and £80. They want to keep it into that almost disposable purchase. Everyone will buy it kind of thing. And then, because that obviously forces them then to have to buy several new games for their bit of hardware. But yeah, looking for next year in November.
Okay.
So the interesting thing, I think the PS3 ones or whatever they're called, they're talking about March, April, aren't they?
Yeah.
So yeah. March, April for that. And then, but I was surprised at the price, because another site was talking about between maybe even as low as £30.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's been different reports on whether this is a dollar conversion someone's done and not done a good job or something.
Mm. Does it spark any interest in any of you guys?
Not really.
I'm watching with interest, but I'm not sure that it's going to
I think technology-wise, it looks an impressive piece of technology. And I noticed last week it was in Time's, you know, invention of the year.
Mm.
You know, so
there could be some interesting tie-ins if they can not replace the pad with it, but maybe augment the pad control with it.
I just can't be
so leaning, things like that.
I know that sounds like a really fat, lazy gamer, but everything.
I've got a head tracker on my PC, which you can use in games, so you can actually turn and have a look around corners and lean and all those kind of things, and it actually adds to an effect. You know, it adds an effect in a game.
Do you use that for porn as well?
Not sure they've come up with the porn.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they will have.
Okay. Our final story for today is the iPlayer for Wii, which apparently I'm going to tell you all about. Don't remember this.
Well, I put it in there purely because I want it for my Xbox, and it's out on everything else, it seems, at the moment, other than my Xbox.
Oh, I'm assuming it's a new channel on the Wii then.
Yeah, it's just a separate channel that you can get on the Wii. But surely this means that we're going to get it on the 360.
I think they've invested quite a lot of time on it, and I'm surprised it's not out in the 360 yet. But then, you know, you've got all the Sky stuff in the 360, so I wonder if they've done some sort of shady...
That's what I'm worried about, because I would trade Sky, Twitter and Facebook for iPlayer in an instant.
And just when you mentioned Facebook, there was that screenshot of a PS3 with a Facebook app on it.
Yeah, yes.
So... no big surprise, really.
Again, you know, like, obviously I'm a PS3 user. Doesn't interest me, to be honest with you.
No, I mean, I've got them on there. The update's out this week for, is it the 17th?
I think it's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the update comes out for the 360 officially for everybody. I've had all three on my Xbox. The one I'll maybe use is Last FM. But to be honest, I'd probably just plug my iPhone in and listen to music off that.
I had a look at the Sky Player just out of interest, and that was it. I've not been back to it.
Yeah, I had a look at the Sky Player, and I've also had a look in the Sky Player on my iPhone, but we'll keep that for another day.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I think that wraps up our news for this week. Let's move on to picks then. Let's start with Henry.
Right, well, my pick this week is a little app for the Mac called Teleport, and it's for anyone that's got more than one Mac, really. Because what it does is it lets you use a single mouse and a keyboard to control several Macs. So it's just a little app that sits in your preference pane, and you can then share your Mac. And it's there are other apps that kind of around that kind of do this. There's a freeware one on Windows called Synergy. But I just really like the way that you set this up. So you'd put your laptop next to your iMac or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then you can drag where the location of where each screen is next to each other, and then the mouse kind of follows just from the edge of one screen onto the edge of the next. So you might think, well, you know, what's really the point of that? But if you've ever tried to use more than one Mac at once on your, you know, on the desk, it can get quite confusing as to whether you're using the trackpad or your mouse or whatever, and it actually really just really improves your kind of productivity if you've got the two screens. It's kind of I suppose like almost having a second monitor.
It sounds like it's working exactly like that.
It is, although you're actually moving on to the second. You're actually controlling a different computer.
Yeah.
So, right.
But it's a clever implementation to sort of the same kind of effect, really.
It does work very well.
It's just, it's really nicely put together. So I'd highly recommend that if you've got more than one Mac.
Can you move Windows across as well then? Like,
no.
You know, like when you're dual screening, you can move a window from one screen to another. Can you do with this?
No, you can't. What it is, it's you're running each computer independently.
I see, right?
But
okay.
Because you've got them on the same on the same workstation, on the same physical piece, then you know you might want to work from one computer to another.
Right. Okay.
And it just allows you to kind of do that without trying to.
So it's actually like running two machines, separate machines, but using just one keyboard and mouse, so to speak.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly
it. That sounds quite good, actually. Interesting. So that's a great pick. How about you, Ian?
My app is a very small focused app for the Mac called Viewfinder.
Okay.
So this is a new application from the guy who did Flickr export on the Mac for both iPhoto and Aperture. And all this does is it's a Flickr browser searcher and downloader. So you fire up the app, type in what you're searching for, and it brings back, based on your preferences, a whole range of photos, which you can then, say, set to background, drag over to Keynote, or just download locally. The really nice thing is you can actually set it by the license you're looking for. So if you're looking for license-free photos to use in a presentation, in Keynote, or you know, as part of a website, I just find it really useful. It only came out 2 weeks ago and I've used it a couple of times already. It's not free, so this might put some people off. It's £15. But for me, it's already helped me out. And even when it comes to doing things like, you know, the album art and stuff like that on the podcast, you know, I'm finding
can you not do it through the Flickr website?
I can, but it's just that the app gives me better control. And that's why I'm saying it's very focused on doing what it does, but it gives me the results far quicker than the Flickr web search, and downloading it's easier as well. So it's just got some more flexibility in there that I quite like. And I will admit, see, if you're not a big Flickr user, or if you're not into, like, you know, photos or images for presentations, it's maybe not such a good app, but for me, it's been great.
Okay, very nice.
Well, that's good. And
Chris?
My pick this week is bestofyoutube.com. It does exactly what it says on the tin. it just goes through YouTube and picks out the funnies or the whatever it considers to be quite good. And I think users get to vote items up and down. It's also available as a vodcast through iTunes and also as an RSS feed. So you can just have one delivered every week or so. And yeah, it's good. Makes me happy when it comes into my inbox.
And I've signed up to the podcast as well, so it's just a nice to have like a really good video kicking around.
Yeah, I mean, you could, well, the website sort of has lots on there, but if you do spend any time watching the website, you're likely just to see the same videos come in through your feed. So it's best to choose one or the other, but I like the feed.
Okay, very nice. And finally, my pick for this week is a little free app for Windows called Paint.net. Now, as a developer, occasionally I find myself having to edit an icon or a picture, and I can't because I don't have Photoshop or any decent art package on my machine. So instead of running to the designers and getting them to change and then waiting for like 5 days before they come back to me, so, you know, something is...
5 days?
I'm exaggerating a little bit there.
Okay, four.
It's quite convenient to have like... a photo editor or a, you know, an art package on your own machine. And Paint.net is a great alternative to Photoshop. It's free, like I said, and it's been around for quite a while actually. But recently they've had their first update for in years. It's now at version 3.5, and basically they, you know, it already had quite a few Photoshop like features. Probably more than what your average user would need, or your average developer. And recently they've added now layers and special effects. There's also unlimited undos. And with this latest update, they've added blurs and distortion effects as well. And they've also improved performance, and it's had a visual makeover, and it's been especially enhanced for Aero and Glass, which are themes for Windows 7 and Vista. And it's a great online community as well. So, you know, if you get stuck at anything, you can always get help online. And there's lots of tutorials as well. And you can get it from www.getpaint.net.
It's a pretty meaty download, that, isn't it? At 200 megabytes?
It's actually very, very feature-rich. For, I mean, for something that's free, you'll be really surprised at what it can do.
I wonder whether this is they've been spurred into redevelopment from the sort of the web-based alternatives, the Pixlr and Sumo's that I sort of picked up on a few weeks back. Because I've not really come across Paint.net.
Oh, right. Okay. Surprised.
But then again, I use Photoshop, so...
Yeah, true.
I don't really have a need.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using it for a while and used it quite a lot a few years ago when I had to do some stuff for a client and, you know...
Will it open up Photoshop files?
You know what, I'm not 100% sure about that. I'll need to look into it.
We'll check it out.
Yep. So, fantastic. That was a nice short podcast. That's us reached the end.
Short, 55 minutes and 40 seconds.
relatively speaking.
Oh, dear.
And it will keep Bomb Dogs happy anyway.
Well, I'm even quite proud of myself that you mentioned short and I didn't relate it to Chris.
Yeah, but you have now.
Oh, damn, so I have.
You mean Chris?
Oh, God.
Yeah,
still got,
Chris.
You're going to consider it 5 spare minutes to to
I was going
to
keep
Chris
going, but I had to stop.
Okay, so thank you for listening. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us always on info@digitaloutbox.com. You can also leave us comments and feedback on our website at www.digitaloutbox.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at Digital Outbox. And something new, you can also leave us messages on Skype at Digital Outbox voicemail.
So Tom left us a review a couple of weeks back, and my foolishness, I forgot to kind of put it in properly last week, but we added it in the edit, and I actually thought it sounded okay.
Mm.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Cheers, Tom.
Look forward to more reviews from you.
Yep.
Chris, did you get any feedback on your Google Wave invites?
We've got one to send out.
Fantastic.
For that. We want more, so we'll think of something else and we'll go.
So does that
it.
Mean we had loads of reviews and you've drawn one name out of the hat and that name happened to be Tam? Or was it you only got one review?
Let's publicise it the first way.
So we still have 5 more Google Wave invites left?
There's still 4 left again.
Oh, 4 left, sorry, apologies. And if somebody wanted an invite, how would they get one?
So they can go onto iTunes for me and go to Digital Outbox and submit a text review for us.
So not just a review, not a star rating, but an actual text review.
An actual text review is what I'm looking for, yeah.
Fantastic.
And also make it 5 stars there, Tom.
Let us know you've done the review by just sending us an email to info@digitaloutbox.com.
Yeah, and don't skimp on the stars.
My God, so many rules.
If you want to find more about us, then you can... Ian, where can we find you?
Blog is iand.net, Twitter is Sweeper.
Okay, anything else? Facebook?
Nah, can't be arsed.
Chris?
Okay, I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK and blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
Okay, and Henry?
Yep, Twitter's TalkRubarb and talkrubarb.com/WordPress. But I can't remember the last time I updated that, so I would stick with Twitter.
Okay.
I updated mine today, moaning about Top Gear and how rubbish it is.
But did you watch in HD?
I did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It didn't help.
But that was the best Top Gear compared. I mean, that was better than all the ones in the last series.
I thought it was a pile of pie.
Tasty.
Yeah. You could replace Richard Hammond.
Oh, I can see where this is going.
You could get out of his bedroom.
Yeah. In fact, you could be a fat Richard Hammond.
Oh, come
on
now,
guys. Fat Steve equivalent.
If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at ShaqN, and on Facebook, you can find me at Shaquille Naeem.
So how's your crystal ball?
Oh, it's a bit cloudy. And my blog is at ShaquilleNaeem.com, but you won't find anything new on there. So I think that's it, guys. So thanks for listening, and catch you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.
It sounds a bit like a burping camel, that.
So you've gone from last week to saying that's fantastic to now saying it sounds like a burping camel.
Yeah, no,
I've never heard
a
burping camel.
I like burping camels.
Do you?
Yeah.
I've never actually heard a burping camel.
We need to investigate.
Well, I don't really want to go and look at any camels, thanks very much.
Compare and contrast.
Maybe we should Bing it and Google it, see which one comes up with the best result.
I think if you search for camel, you'd find something you were not expecting.
I'm thinking of camel toe, but I don't know if that's the same thing.
Camel burping, endless.
I'm going to go to Google right now.
Go on then. Shall I get a, no, I, oh,
no. Burp.
I'm sure there's a... No, I can't say that.
Well, there's some video results of camel burps.
Oh, hang on, there's a YouTube video of
Hold
a camel
on.
Burp.
It does sound like it. No, it doesn't really.
See, now I'm worried that you're thinking about what I actually search for on YouTube.
Well, to be honest, I think I'm going to register myself as a public body just so I can find out.
Yeah.
There is a YouTube video of camel burping, so if you want to listen, go to YouTube.
I'm sure I've just said that. Honestly.
I was listening to the camel burp.
What was that?
Well, you need the URL in the show notes, okay?
I'll put the URL in the show notes, and honestly, Bomb, I like the music. It's just Henry, it's a bit funny about camel burps. Anyway, I'm going to go and shoot some terrorists.
Let's do it. And civilians.
I think that's what you're looking for, Ian.
I don't think I'll put that one in the show notes.
No.
I'm kind of worried that you got that quite quickly.
Yeah, because I've been on it before.
Oh, no way!
Okay.
Oh. Well, that isn't Lady Gaga.